No. We'll do it live. Fuck it.
Hi.
Comment allez-vous?
I don't do French.
Oh, well, you're missing out. Oh, wait, what the heck is that? Sorry, I'm watching the... Oh, never mind. I'm watching the Giants and the Dodgers play, but they showed a highlight from a different game. Yeah, these things happen. Whatever. I just found out tonight, and I don't know, like, it's weird because I guess October 2nd, I know the Giants and the Dodgers finished the season against each other, and I'm a huge Giants fan, or a giant Giants fan. That last game will be the legend himself, Vin Scully's last ever broadcast. And it'll be at AT&T Park in San Francisco. And I'm like torn. Like, on one hand, I'm like, I kind of want to like go because it'd be kind of cool. On the other hand, what better way to honor Vin Scully than by listening to it? Because the man is, I mean, say what you will about the Dodgers, and they are a scumbag organization full of cheaters who should be burned at a, you know, on a funeral pyre in India. Vin Scully is a great, great man. But that's neither here nor there, everybody. Welcome to the show here at HalfGuarded.com. I have created a very special graphic for the show now. It actually says Matt Grady carries the show at HalfGuarded.com. And if you're thinking, Mike, didn't last week you say you were going to be sober? Yes, but I had to start drinking again. And it's for a very, very good reason. Matt, ask me, Mike, what's a very, very good reason?
What is the very, very good reason you are drinking again?
Well, this Sunday, I will be in Las Vegas for approximately a little over about 14 hours or so. Because my favorite, yes, I know, my favorite comedian of all time, the man himself, the legend, Doug Stanhope, is playing a 25th anniversary show at the very spot where he started his stand-up career doing an open mic gig. It's at a place that is literally called the Dive Bar. It's 2 miles from the airport. And I realized I can't go to this thing and not be drinking, but I've been sober for a while. I'm like, oh shit, like I'll get shit faced after like 2 drinks. So like I've decided all week I need to be drinking more. I'm actually in training for this. However, this will be, in my estimation, my last night of drinking, maybe forever, or at least for the very, very foreseeable future. It's a big deal because most people, I don't know how many people know this, but at 33 years of age, I didn't start drinking until I was 25 because my dad was a bad alcoholic. And the very first drink I ever had in my life, I was 25 years old. I was in law school. I was studying abroad in France, my favorite country besides America and a couple of others. And I was the only French speaker, so I was kind of popular for a while. You know, 20 kids needed me to translate all their French for them. I'm like, yeah, including the one drunk French chick who said, "You are lying. You must be French. Your accent is so good." I'm like, yeah, if you ask me more than like 3 questions, I'm going to screw it up because I sound like a moron. But I'm standing there under the Eiffel Tower, the Tour Eiffel, with two of my classmates. And it was a beautiful starry night. Not a cloud in the sky. The Eiffel Tower is lit up. It's beautiful. And both of my classmates left because they had to call their fiancés. And I was single, and I looked at the bottle of wine on the ground, and I thought to myself, what a better first drink in one's life than a swig of wine underneath the Eiffel Tower as an Irishman replacing the lack of love with the bottle. And so that was always, that was my, literally my first drink. And now I think, what better way to end 8 years of drinking than to have your last drink be at a place literally called the Dive Bar in Las Vegas with one of comedy's greatest drunks. It's the perfect bookend to all this. It works because I've been wanting to cut down and get rid of this shit anyway. So, I'm in training though until Sunday. I don't know if I'll be alive for next week. If I'm not, Matt, you get full creative control of the site. Brian and Tony retain their interest rights. Just make sure Fetman does a good job at the comic show. And Dazza gets to publish his stuff. And Peach, keep writing shit. So yeah. Anyways, it's all yours now. Go.
Okay. So is the non-drinking thing, is it a physical issue or are you just a mess?
It's kind of everything. So I mean, what really happened was I was fine until last April, and that's when I blew out my MCL. I had a grade 3 MCL sprain. It was a week before a big tournament. All I did instead of, you know, being smart was I taped that thing up with so much tape you can't believe. I competed in the jiu-jitsu tournament. I got silver at a higher weight class than I ever should have been. I have now medaled at 150, 160, 170, 175, 181, 190, and 210. And I did it just because I knew that the school needed the points, the Carlson Gracie Academy here at the headquarters. And, but, you know, that probably aggravated it more. And rather than go to a doctor or anything, because I talked to my uncle who is an orthopedic surgeon, and he's kind of like, if it's an MCL sprain like that, there's no surgery. It's just time off. But I was in a lot of pain, so I had nothing. Like, I could not train at all. And I was so bored. And, like, all of a sudden, like, I had all this free time at night. So it's like, well, I could drink, and it didn't affect going to work or anything like that. And I put on weight, and I don't think it's healthy for me. And I just think, in general, I'm better off without the booze in my life. I think that there are other ways I can mess up my brain that aren't alcohol related, and like it's
like concussions or what?
Other drugs of choice, maybe.
That's good because we're going to talk about some different drugs later,
like Nick Diaz, or Nate Diaz. But the hardest thing has been just sitting around at night. And if you don't, I mean, you get kind of used to drinking every night, and I was just boozing way too much, and I had, like, once I stopped, I'm like, holy shit, there's a lot of time at night here. Like, there's not a lot of TV shows for me to watch. This is kind of boring, but I got over that hump, and I've been planning a short novella that I'm going to be tentatively starting. I think I can probably get it published through Amazon and things like that. And I've been putting more work into the website. As I bragged earlier, we hit 1 million page views last week. We had our biggest day in history with the Conor McGregor Nate Diaz fight. And, you know, it's just, it's a good thing. And, it's funny because I've been having this conversation with myself in my head. And I know everybody, it's Matt's show, and I'm just talking like a madman. It doesn't matter. It's my fucking website. Is that there's only one vice in the world I think that is truly evil, and that's gambling. And I don't have the gambling urge. Like, I whatever money I have in life, I've worked, I'm not going to blow it on gambling. But the reason I think gambling is awful is, one, and mind you, I would not make it illegal. I think if you want to blow your money on the ponies, fuck it, so be it. But gambling totally destroys people. They mortgage their futures, their houses, all that stuff. It's like hardcore gambling addicts are bad. But if I drink to blackout status, which I probably will tonight, I will wake up in the morning and feel like shit. No matter what, you always feel like shit if you're hungover. I've never done heroin, but I presume the heroin addicts, you know, they have withdrawal. There's always, never once, there's always a bad feeling that results from every other vice except gambling. Because every once in a while, somebody goes on a gambling binge and they just hit it right and they win $10,000. And they don't, you know, they don't think about the $30,000 they lost to get there. But that's why I think gambling is so destructive, because you do get a reward for indulging in it, whereas you do not get any reward at all for indulging in eating a lot. You feel like shit. Your stomach's upset. Same with booze. Same with smoking. Same with cocaine or heroin or any other drug. Not really weed, but weed's different. Maybe it is a wonder drug. I don't know. Well, that's the Diaz brothers. But gambling is just so... I had a friend growing up, and his dad just... Oh, he wasted so much money at the track. And again, if you want to gamble, so be it. Good for you. I'm not going to tell you not to do it, but... Man alive, I don't know. To me, gambling addicts are the saddest of them all. They're the ones just sitting there because they kind of know that life sucks, but they're praying. You know, you can say it's praying, hoping, wishing, whatever. they're waiting for an external force to just give them that one little bit of luck, and they all think that they're just due for it. But it never happens. But anyways, enough with all this shit. What do we got on the docket for tonight?
All right.
Try to keep this show under, like, 3 hours.
Yeah, we have to tonight. I might fall asleep. Although that could be an interesting show. See how long you could go on while I'm just out.
You want me to pull a Meltzer? Yeah. First of all, I did this show for fucking like a decade all by myself. And you had children. You went to a kids thing tonight. What was that about?
Oh, my daughter is moving. Basically, the school she was in was K through second grade. So she's moving to the next school, which is third through sixth or something like that. So they did like a little scavenger hunt at the school. My wife and I took her, and that was pretty much it. It wasn't anything too exciting.
Was I weird? Because like when I went to school, it was Catholic school, but still
you
like
were, you I, were weird and you still are, yes. Well,
true, but I did K through 8 and then high school. I didn't have junior high or any of this, like, 3 years, moved to another school for 3 years. Like, what is that?
Yeah, I mean, our town, essentially what happened was there was an older school that was built, like, you know, 1920 or something, and it was beat up, kind of falling apart. They said it really wasn't safe for the kids anymore, so they shut that school down and kind of realigned where everybody was. I guess the school population has gone down a little bit in our town. So they basically shut down a school and kind of made one school, you know, pre-K through third, one third through sixth, and then really, I think it's seventh and eighth through senior year, all at the high school now. So they just kind of realigned things based on the population and one of the schools being crappy and falling apart.
Well, as I give you a point of constructive criticism, because I know you've been worried about it, you did just say, watch it.
Okay.
Be positive. Watch William F. Buckley and be willing to embrace the silence. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe in the back of my mind that your restaurant that you basically run or the big boss at, didn't you guys have some sort of anniversary or something recently?
It's going to be 30 years in March.
Maybe that's
every year. Yeah, maybe. We always do like an anniversary promotion every year, but not until March. It'll be 30 years, I guess. I've been there 12, but they've been there 30.
God, man, alive. Fucking A. I want to go up to New England. I really want to see we did the lighthouse thing before. So, all right, go on with the show, carry it. Otherwise, I'll just keep talking.
Okay, so I was thinking we could start by going back to UFC 202, then talk some current news, and then finish with a little bit of a preview of the upcoming shows this weekend. There's a Bellator show and a UFC on Fox show, headlined by Damian Maia and Carlos Condit. So, but we'll backtrack first, and we'll finish in the future and start in the past. So obviously, UFC 202 was one of the bigger shows in company history. I'm seeing things like it might have been the third most bought pay-per-view in the history of the company. Whether or not that's true, the final numbers aren't out, but obviously it's a big show, cracked 1 million buys. Main event, we had Conor McGregor beating Nate Diaz by decision. Obviously, this is old news at this point. Sorry to spoil this for anyone who hasn't heard that yet, but my question to you, first question right off the bat, is what were your thoughts on the decision? Conor won by a majority decision. There was one judge that scored it as a draw. On the rest of the scorecards, he won 48-47. I believe both of those judges scored the first round, second round, and fourth round for McGregor, with the third and fifth going to Diaz. Did you agree with that? Did you think that was fair? Because there was a lot of talk about it being a robbery and that it was the wrong decision. People thought Nate won the fight.
Yeah, for certain it was not a robbery. It was a close. It's weird because when I was watching it, I'm like half watching it, half transcribing it, doing it for the site. So I think sometimes I don't always get the best judgment of these things because I'm just multitasking. I'm like, okay, I want to write this down. What funny picture should I use next? All that stuff. My initial thought when the fight was over was that was just kind of a draw fight. Like, yeah, like Nate, I mean, schoolyard principles, Connor wins. Nate looked like crap. But I just remember in that third round, there was a point where I'm like, oh my gosh, McGregor's going to lose. But then it came back well in the fourth round. I then did the dumbest thing in the world, which is, well, not dumb, but I rewatched it. And you cannot ever score a fight by rewatching it. Because when you judge a fight, if you're a judge, you watch 5 minutes, you have less than 60 seconds to determine who won that round. And that's it. You have to mark down on your scorecard who won the round, and you don't get to think about it again. That's it. It's a snap judgment. And so when I'm watching it the first time, my snap judgment, and it's one of those really bad things that happens, and it happens to me, happens to everyone. You will weigh later rounds disproportionately. Because when I watch the first round, the first time, I'm like, Connor looks great. It's a brilliant game plan. But I didn't really think it was 10-8. Because, I mean, he dropped Nate, but Nate never seemed hurt. Because Nate has that Diaz chin where they bend but not break. And every time he went down, you're going to see he was wide-eyed, cleared, ready to go. But when I rewatched it, in comparison to all the other rounds, I thought, okay, that was a 10-8 round, given the context of the entire fight. My initial thought, and I know I had messaged you about it, I'm like, I think I had a draw with Nate having a third round 10-8. When I rewatched that fight, though, I clearly had Conor McGregor winning the fight. I had him with 1, 2, and 4, and I thought 2 was closer than it was initially, but the second time around, I thought, no, Conor dominated 4-plus minutes, and the minute that Nate was in control, a lot of the punches didn't land. It was more of an excitement factor. The crowd was into it. Same with the third round. I thought Nate was doing all this damage and Connor was in trouble. And no doubt, Connor was hurt. And fuck you, Dodgers, for just hitting a home run. But Connor actually weathered that storm a lot better than I thought he did when I rewatched it. But part of that's also because in the back of my mind, I'm sure I was, biased because I knew the judges had scored it that way, but he slipped a lot more punches than I thought. So again, if Nate had won the fight, I think that would not have been right. I don't think that Nate had a claim to winning the fight. I think that, again, on a snap judgment basis, anything from Connor to winning to a Connor draw makes sense. And doing the dumbass hindsight, oh, let me look at it when I already know what happened, Connor clearly won the fight.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I scored it 48-47, the same way as the judges. I think I even sent that to you right after. Obviously, you never know. I think I said it 48-47 with a question mark. That's what I was going to score, but who knows with the judges. But that's the way it went. I didn't have an issue with it. I think it's a lot of people who maybe a little biased and are Diaz fans and want to see McGregor lose and like to see him lose because he's kind of got a little bit of that heat where people just want to see him lose at this point. That might be because some of the social media stuff he's done and his persona. It might be just getting a little bit old for some people. So McGregor's obviously coming off the win at 170. Where would you go with McGregor next? What do you see in store for him?
It's funny because my brother Brian was over who's obviously one of the geniuses behind this thing that makes the whole website work. He came over on Saturday, and after the show was over, we took my dogs for a WALK. I have to spell out the word because if I say it, they will both perk up. We were talking a lot about what you do with McGregor next, and I thought, why can't we be recording this? And he goes, why do you have to record everything? I go, because that's my life. It's interesting. I know, the UFC is basically pressuring McGregor to go down to 145. I think 145 is his best weight class. 155, maybe. But
do you think UFC really cares where he fights at just as long as he fights? You think they're putting a lot of pressure on him to go down and fight Aldo again? Do they care if he fought, Eddie Alvarez instead at 155?
That's interesting because I know that they want to get their titles cleared up. Like they don't, they don't like the idea of having interim champions, and I understand that. And like Conor was kind of like wishy washy in the post conference stuff about post fight conference about, oh, I already beat Jose Aldo. I spent 2 years chasing him. I knocked him out in 13 seconds. Why should I do it again? Blah 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 blah, which sounds really good, but I'm reading that as, I kind of knew that I got lucky by beating the hell out of a really, really good dude with one punch, and I don't want to risk that again because Jose looked like a boss when he fought Frankie Edgar. Like, the dude's just awesome. I think, though, that they want him at 145 because he's the only money fight they have there, whereas at 155, they're, you know, you could have Donald Cerrone. Maybe we'll talk about him later. If he's not a free, if he signs with the UFC, him and Eddie Alvarez, that's a big fight. You have Nate Diaz, obviously, anywhere is a big fight. Conor at 170 is definitely not going to happen again. But I even think him at 155, like, he weighed 168. He said he walked in the cage at 167. That is not a weight cut at all. Like, I have personally, as just like a guy doing jiu-jitsu tournaments in a freaking, you know, gym around here, I cut 13 pounds once. I think I cut 18 pounds over 4 days once. Like, that's not a huge weight cut. People think it's a lot, but it's like, it's really not. Like, you just don't drink for 24 hours. You don't drink water for 24 hours. You take a really hot bath, and that weight comes off. So Conor, to me, walking around at 167 is, yeah, he's a bit big as a featherweight, but he's also bulked up for that weight. And I think he probably really walks between 160 and 165. And that's a normal featherweight's weight. He, I think, probably doesn't know how to cut weight. I don't think a lot of guys know how to cut weight. Anthony Pettis. I think that his, you know, I think he's best at 145. He seems to have more energy. When he fought Max Holloway, he had a blown ACL and he still had energy to go in the third round. And whereas with, you know, Diaz, whether it was Diaz's size, the extra muscle and weight that Conor was carrying, Conor did not seem to have the ability to go a hard five rounds at the higher weights. And, you know, everybody thinks, oh, athletes should not cut weight, but there's a discipline issue to getting to a certain weight. And I think Conor benefits from that. And maybe it's 155, that's fine. I mean, obviously Nate's a very quality lightweight, and Conor did well with him. So he could probably do well with most 155ers, not worry about the size too much. But I really don't know where you go with them. I mean, to me, the biggest fight possible is Conor versus Nate main eventing the UFC in Madison Square Garden. It's kind of a quick turnaround, but you want to have a giant, the biggest fight maybe in UFC history, in the biggest venue in the world. That, to me, is 2 million buys. You do those two at MSG rubber match with all the New York press, I think they set records that they've never set before.
Yeah, it would be a huge show. I don't get the impression that, I think Dana White even said that he had had enough of that matchup, but he says a lot of things. So either way, they got to get moving. I mean, November's only, you know, it's the 24th of August now, so November's creeping up pretty quick.
Well, and that's actually one of the things, is that you basically have to book November about right now.
Right.
Because if you presume that most guys are going to want 8 weeks, Nate and Conor, if they were to fight in November, would have roughly about six, if they're lucky, after they recover from their injuries. So basically, November needs to be sealed pretty quick, and I think they will seal it up pretty quick, because they want to have a main event to announce when they have the tickets go on sale. And, you know, I think it kind of rests on what happens with John Jones. I think he's their guy. And if I'm the UFC, I'm nervous, because to me, the only person on their entire roster I would actually count on to fight in November would have been Ronda Rousey, because she will do all the press. She will never pull out of anything. She is, I mean, say what you want about her, but she does what she's supposed to do, but she's not going to fight. Conor, I'd be nervous about, because he might say, hey, I know these guys need me a lot. I know they need all this stuff. I can call my own shots.
Right.
And all of a sudden that causes problems. And obviously John Jones, you know, the man may just get busted running cocaine to Mexico for a drug cartel.
Could happen. Final pick. Who's he going to fight next?
Jose Aldo. I think UFC forces Aldo. It.
Alright. I'm voting Eddie Alvarez. I think he wants that other belt. He's been talking about it. You know what people don't really ever talk about? The day RDA broke his foot was the worst day ever in Conor McGregor's career because it put him in that short notice fight with Diaz that he lost, and then he fell off the rails with all the retirement talk. He was originally supposed to fight for the lightweight title, and he never got that shot. The Diaz fight kind of took the world by storm. He lost that fight, did the rematch. And now maybe he can go back to getting that shot he originally wanted at the lightweight title. I think he probably wants it. You know Eddie Alvarez wants it. Why would you want to fight Nurmagomedov?
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. You know? Although I will say Conor was actually kind of lucky in that regard because if he had lost to Dos Anjos, and he very well may have because Dos Anjos is no joke,
right?
He would have lost to a boring joke of a Brazilian. Dos Anjos would not become a big star. He would not be able to talk trash. But right. He lost to Nate, and Nate can talk shit. And that right. built up the rematch so big so that when Conor won, and I actually think this fight was very, very important for Conor's career because he didn't just, you know, so far he's looked like a god inside the octagon. Everybody gets knocked out. Everybody looks like they're nothing. And he went in there against a real tough cholo, as he would say, essay. And he fought a war, and fight yeah. fans like that war. You know, we like knowing that, you know, Muhammad Ali, he beat George Foreman after a war. He went through right. hell, and that made him more of a legend. And I don't know if he would have had that with Dos Anjos. I mean, Nate is just such a perfect opponent for Conor, and, you know, and frankly, I'd rather Nate Diaz get the money than Dos Anjos. Nothing against Dos Anjos, but the Diaz brothers are just so great. They've earned it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. I was just thinking his original motivation, he claimed, obviously money is a big part of it, but it was to hold two championships at the same time. So I'm guessing that's what he's going to push for. And I don't know from a Styles matchup that Alvarez might be even a better Styles matchup than Dos Anjos, because Alvarez gets rocked a lot in a lot of fights. I would like to see that fight, but that's just me.
Oh, I think it would actually be a very good fight. My only real problem with Eddie Alvarez is that, I mean, to his credit, he has shown a willingness to be boring if it means a victory.
Right.
When he fought Anthony Pettis, that fight should have been a lot better. He chose to grind it out and make it a boring piece of shit. And he might do, if I'm Eddie Alvarez, I do the exact same thing to Conor McGregor. Cause a win is when you get to that super highest of high levels, a win is a win. And that's all anybody ever remembers.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So the other half of the main event, we had, our friend Nate Diaz. Obviously he wasn't happy about the loss. He said he thought he won the fight. Claimed he had a couple injuries, doing the typical Diaz storyline of, you know, I'm hurt, the judges got it wrong. Typical excuses after they lose. Kind of standard at this point. If you haven't noticed that from them, I'm sorry, but that's what they tend to do. At one of the pressers after the show, he was using a vape pen with something called CBD oil in it. I'm not real familiar with marijuana. Well, I'm going to turn it over to you here. But with marijuana at all, CBD oil, it's one of the components that is in typical weed, I guess. But it's non I forget what the term is, like psychoactive or something. He said he was using it to heal up. It's good for joints, inflammation, that sort of thing. He could be in trouble with USADA for this. They're apparently looking into it. Who knows what that means? According to the USADA, you know, code, the bylaws, whatever you want to call them, 6 hours before the fight and 6 hours after the fight is considered in competition, to my understanding. So anything he did within 6 hours after the fight is considered against the rules, and he could suffer the consequences. Again, this is not an unusual thing for the Diaz brothers, but what's your take? To me, it's not a big deal. The fight's over. Who cares what he's doing? But at the same time, he's obviously pushing the envelope and kind of sticking it in their face. So what, your thoughts on it?
Yeah, in theory, he might get in trouble. I don't think he will. He probably already took all of his post-fight tests. And
right.
And if they test him again, they would have to test him basically right after the press conference and say, we're within 6 hours, and therefore you're in competition. The test him the next day doesn't count. And marijuana is fine for out-of-competition usage. Whereas it comes to CBD, and it's something I've kind of known a little bit about, but I did some reading on it, just to be smart. Basically, within marijuana, you have two
main... You were thinking, how can I get some of this? This sounds good. That didn't run through your head?
No. Well, actually, when you find out what CBD is, you don't want it.
Okay.
Within marijuana, there's two main components, CBD and THC. THC is what people want. THC gets you high. It's what makes you feel good and loopy and blah, 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 blah. CBD is the part of marijuana that is, in theory, medically helpful. When you hear stories about like some little girl in Colorado that had some marijuana extract and helped with their cancer or some shit like that, it's CBD that they're pushing. CBD has no psychoactive component to it, in theory. So basically, if you're only smoking CBD, you don't get high. There's no fun to it. It only helps you heal.
It's basically medicinal.
It's pure medicinal. It's a difference between, I would say, taking an aspirin and taking a Vicodin. A Vicodin might have a lot of Vicodin is also laced with aspirin or Motrin, Tylenol, whatever. So it has both an anti-inflammatory and a pain-killing agent, whereas CBD would just be the, you know, for comparison's sake, the anti-inflammatory part, not the pain-killing part. That said, there is a small psychoactive component to CBD. Very, very little. Somebody like a Diaz brother would probably not notice it, but my mom would probably definitely notice it. That all said, he's a grown fucking man. This is 2016. Marijuana is not totally legal in Vegas. It's actually just medically permitted at this time. However, if you have a medical marijuana card from another state, Vegas will honor it. I'm guessing that Nate has. What they'll do is they'll grant you a temporary card of your own real quick without any – I mean, you can literally apply online for it because, you know, medical marijuana. Very serious business. They take their drugs seriously in that business. That's why they have drugs named like, Freaky Jim or whatever, you know, like every other drug has some sort of weird name, and marijuana, you got Blue Sky and, there's a really good one. Harajuana, I think is the one, what they call one of them. I'm like, really? You guys are selling Harajuana as a medicinal thing? Really? Right. Whatever. But, it's basically a non-issue. That said, maybe it helped Nick when he got in a fight in the club afterwards, so.
Yeah. To me.
How was that for a segue?
That was good. But to me, it's not a big deal. It's after the fight, and to me, it's silly. Who even knows if he just said that, too? I mean, who knows, but...
Oh, I'm sure he was smoking real shit. And the truth is that the entire testing mechanism for marijuana is outdated and it doesn't make any sense because depending on how much you use as an individual, you could basically, if you smoke a lot of marijuana, it will be in your fat cells for a long time. But that doesn't mean you've smoked it for a while. Like, you could smoke every day for 3 months, stop, and a week later, it will still show up as positive, even though you haven't used any marijuana, which is stupid. And, you know, that they're trying to get a more precise test, but there just isn't one. I mean, if you go into the cage high, so be it. Like, I understand we want to ban that. Maybe it has a little bit of a pain-killing effect, I think it would also have. If it has a, if you're smoking enough to kill pain, you're also going to be smoking enough to dull your reflexes. So I don't really know if it's much of a benefit there. Like, I've been kind of high at times, and if I was that high, I'd be like, oh shit! Like, you get kind of a state, and it's very prevalent in the jiu-jitsu community, and it's actually kind of a good thing because you stop kind of caring about what happens. And when you're training, that's a really, really good mindset to have that allows you to get tapped out, that allows you to be put in bad positions. You don't have your ego involved. And I think that actually does encourage better training to a degree. But I doubt that anybody's going into the cage actually high. It just everybody I've ever known that's ever smoked pot, just nobody would do that. You'd be... It would be insane. I'd rather go in the cage drunk than high.
Changing topics. In the co-main, Anthony Rumble Johnson knocked out Glover Teixeira in 13 seconds, laid claim, further claim to being the number one contender for the light heavyweight title. He called out Daniel Cormier after the fight. That fight looked and appeared to make a lot of sense with John Jones still on the sidelines, still waiting to hear about his suspension and how long he's going to be out. Of course, Dana White chimed in that he did not see that fight for Cormier next. He wanted to do Rumble Johnson versus John Jones next. Personally, I would much rather see John Jones versus Anthony Rumble Johnson than a rematch against Daniel Cormier. Your thoughts on the Glover fight? One, he just destroyed him in 13 seconds, knocked him out cold. Glover hadn't been knocked out in 14 years. And two, would you rather see him fight John Jones or Daniel Cormier next?
I had not realized it had been basically his entire career that Glover Teixeira had not been knocked out. That makes it even more impressive.
It's pretty wild.
It's Anthony Johnson. I mean, you half expect it, but when he actually does it like that, I was talking to brother Brian, we're like, I don't know if I've ever seen anybody like this at the highest level of MMA with that kind of scary power. Like, what do you do against a guy like that? And I mean, presuming it's a five-round fight, like, all things being equal in the world, I want to see John Jones versus Anthony Johnson. I don't care. Yeah. I don't care about Daniel Cormier. Cormier lost to John Jones to me. He's not the real champion. That said, he is a champion because Jones fucked up a lot, although he may get out of it. There is something when the belt's not on the line, it loses a little luster. I don't know if I want to see Johnson and Cormier too. That would be great if I knew John Jones wasn't coming back, but I just really want to see John Jones have to fight Anthony Johnson more than anything, because Anthony Johnson has the possibility of doing what nobody else can do, and that is beating the shit out of John Jones. Not winning a close decision, not, you know, whatever. I don't think most people in light heavyweights, you know, Daniel Cormier included, he's going to win a decision. Anthony Johnson might just knock John Jones out in 30 seconds. He's that kind of dude, and I think, to me, again, as a fight fan, I always like to see new fights that I haven't seen before. Rematches are fun in some regards, but for the most part, you know, I don't expect John Jones and Cormier to go differently. I think it'll probably be the same fight. Maybe Cormier wins, maybe he doesn't. They've pretty much shown what they can do. Same with Cormier and Johnson. It's going to be, can Cormier survive Johnson for 5 minutes? If so, we know what the fight's going to be. But Johnson and Jones, I mean, holy shit. You got a fucking destroyer in Anthony Johnson. A guy who has something that, you know, John Jones has never faced. Daniel Cormier was an amazing wrestler, but John Jones had stuffed and dealt with really great wrestlers. He dealt with really good strikers. He dealt with all kinds of guys. Long guys, tall guys, short guys, fat guys, skinny guys, whatever. But someone like Anthony Johnson, who has the ability to basically take a pinky, touch you on your chin, and you go out flat cold, John Jones hasn't dealt with that. And over 25 minutes, John Jones is bound to get hit once. And he's shown a good chin at times, but there's a good chin, and then there's dealing with Anthony Johnson. So, I mean, I almost wish I could, like, strip Cormier of the title, say, Jones, it's your title, Jones versus Johnson at UFC in Madison Square Garden for the light heavyweight championship, it would be bullshit. Nobody would accept it. It wouldn't be fair, but that, to me, would be the one I want to see the most.
Yeah, me too. No argument here. Another guy who had a big win at 202 was Cody Garbrandt. Destroyed Takeya Mizugaki, knocked him out in short order, 48 seconds in the first round. Real spectacular win. Where does Garbrandt go next? You see him getting a title shot against Dominic Cruz? Because that seems like the fight they're kind of building. The other fighters who are ranked ahead of Garbrandt are TJ Dillashaw, Uriah Faber, Rafael Assuncao, Brian Caraway, and John Lineker. Obviously, Dillashaw and Faber have already been there, done that. No one really cares about Assuncao. Caraway, I don't think, would be competitive. Lineker's a name nobody really knows yet. Garbrandt's making some noise in the division. You see him getting the next shot?
Yeah, to me, it's either Garbrandt, Caraway, or Lineker. Everybody else is coming off a loss, or they've already fought Dominic Cruz.
Right.
Lineker would be interesting just because of his power. I still wish he could make 125, because I would love to see what happens when he... Cause he's basically, you know, a midget version of Anthony Johnson. But Garbrandt, you know, he's talked it up a little bit. Cruz has jumped on it. I think Dominic Cruz sees easy money in Cody Garbrandt, to be honest. I think he recognizes the story of, you know, Dominic Cruz versus Team Alpha Male, number, you know, 57 or whatever it would be at this point.
Right.
There's a story to be told. Garbrandt, I mean, he fought a guy in Mizugaki who I thought it would be a little tougher, but he smoked him. He looked great. It was It was impressive. But that said, you know, Thomas Almeida was, I mean, I hate the bullshit rankings, but even in my own head, Almeida was ahead of Mizugaki. Like, he took a step back as far as competition is concerned.
Right.
There's not a lot of guys for Garbrandt to fight. I mean, presuming that Dominic Cruz wants to fight soon, Garbrandt's, I presume, healthy. If you ask me, TJ Dillashaw, Lineker, Brian Caraway, or Cody Garbrandt, I say Garbrandt. I like Caraway in some respects, but he's just gonna get murdered by Cruz.
I think he needs another win too. Anyway, I mean, I don't know. He looked good against Sterling, but it wasn't like he dominated him or finished him. I mean, do Caraway and Lineker or Caraway and Dillashaw. I think he needs one more win. And granted, Garbrandt hasn't been around long either with this huge run in the UFC, but he's coming off two spectacular knockouts against top 10-ish guys himself. And there's a storyline. That's what I go Garbrandt Cruz next.
Yeah, I think that makes the most sense. And on the undercard, do Caraway and Lineker as the number one contenders fight. Lineker, hey, to his credit, stepped up when he beat McDonald. I mean, that was something like to look at and go, oh shit, his power carries it anyway. Like, that's a real win there.
Sure.
And I love McDonald. I've loved him since his UFC debut in Seattle on the undercard of Rogério Nogueira fight. I think it was Tito Ortiz. I remember he was like 19 years old. I'm like, oh, this dude's good. He's going to be scary. Yeah. And he's only 23 years old, so fuck him. I hate you, you young bastard. But yeah, Cody Garbrandt, despite having really, really bad tattoos, because when you get tattoos up your neck, like, you got problems there, dude, because that shit hurts. And I would, oh my gosh. I mean, like, there are places on your body to get tattoos, and I've kind of, like, learned over the years, like, my arm is fine, my back is fine. The chest hurt like hell, because there's a lot of bone behind that. The neck, I cannot imagine. And, like, I got ideas for stuff on, like, my ribs or whatever. I'm like, that's going to suck ass. I cannot imagine doing it on your fucking neck like that. Like, Garbrandt's insane. But it doesn't mean he's a good fighter. But, he, you know, the last two fights is, in particular, I mean, he's a good fighter. He's, you know, whatever, 10-0 with 9 knockouts or 9-0 with 8 knockouts, whatever it is. Yeah.
He's one of those guys who's a really good fighter until he loses, and you're like, oh, geez, he can't do this or that, or, ooh, he's not good against this sort of guy, but haven't seen it yet, so.
Yeah, especially with Dominic Cruz. I mean, first of all, Dominic Cruz is a genius. I think he may be the smartest man in the entire sport. And he was talking at one of the post-fight deals or whatever. He's like, yeah, he hits real hard. I am the best in the entire world at not getting hit. And that's absolutely true. Like, nobody ever connects clean on Dominic Cruz.
Yeah, that's a funny thing to brag about. I'm the best at not getting hit in the world.
It's true, though. And like, you know what?
A heelish thing to say, though. He's not like, I'm the best striker in MMA. I'm the best at not getting hit. It's just a funny thing.
It's true, but it's like, if there are two parts of stand-up fighting, hitting, not getting hit.
Right.
And he's pretty good at hitting, but he's really great at not getting hit.
Sure.
And, you know, Garbrandt, he's a hell of a boxer. And way to go to warning track there, Posey, you dick. I would probably go with Garbrandt. I mean, to me, it's either Garbrandt or Lineker. Caraway is in the background. He's won his fights. He's done well. He's actually winning a lot more than you would kind of expect. But he's still kind of Misha Tate's boyfriend in my mind.
Absolutely. I think he needs one more big win.
I can hear you typing.
Yeah, I'm moving ahead. That's a good hint that we're changing topics.
Wait, were you going to pull up an audio clip to see if we can get that to work?
No, but I mean, I can do that. I'm not prepared for that right now. So here's the two other big fights. Well, I shouldn't say big fights, but two other fights on that show that mattered would be a good way to describe it. Donald Cerrone destroyed Rick Story. And Lorenz Larkin destroyed Neil Magny. Interestingly enough, both guys' contracts with the UFC are up. This was the final fight for both of them. Do either of them leave the UFC, or do you see them both re-signing?
I did not know that Larkin's contract was up. And
he's got a history with Coker and not Bellator, but Coker and Strikeforce.
Yeah, I don't think Larkin leaves UFC. I think they keep him around. I mean, he looked amazing. Mm-hmm. Neil Magny's no joke, and he fucking made him look like an amateur. I'm like, holy shit. And, I mean, Magny didn't know what to do. He could not deal with any of those leg kicks. Cerrone, I think that he's a real weird one to judge, because I don't think he's a championship caliber guy. And I love Donald Cerrone. But it just seems when he gets to the highest of the high levels, he doesn't make it happen. And my guess is that you had messaged me that, like, you know, Bellator is going to offer him, we'll say, $300,000 a fight or whatever.
Yeah, there was something I saw, and obviously it's not the probably the best source in the world. I don't even remember who it was, but somebody on Twitter was saying $350,000 a fight, which is big money.
If that's true, I think Cerrone takes it, because the UFC is not going to give him $350,000 per fight. Now, if he stays in the UFC and fights for a championship, he'll make more money than he ever will in Bellator. Because for one title fight, I'm guessing he makes $2 million or whatever. But he probably needs one or two more wins to fight for the welterweight title. He's got three in a row, but it's such a stacked division. He's looked great. And at lightweight, yeah, him and Eddie Alvarez have a bit of a story. I think it's a good story. I think there's something, if I'm the UFC, I'm like, maybe I can do that. But it's not like this money-making scam of a story. And if I'm Cerrone and they're guaranteeing me $350,000 for, we'll say, three or four fights, I know I joked with you before offline, I'm like, he'll make $1 million in like 6 months. And it's like,
not even, yeah.
Yeah, like, that's the way Cerrone is. It's weird because Cerrone's a guy that is both motivated by money, but it also doesn't give a shit. Like, he makes a lot of money, and he just spends it. Like, I guarantee when he's 50 years old, he's living in a trailer down by a creek, and he's just hunting and fishing, and he doesn't give a shit, and he'll be like, yeah, drinking a six-pack of Bud Light or whatever, or Coors, and he'll be like, yeah, I used to fight professionally, and now I just fucking hunt for owls and fish for salmon or whatever they got in there in New Mexico. I'm happy, man. Like, he's just, you know, he really is like that. Like, he's out of his fucking mind. The weigh-in with Rick Story, oh my gosh. If I was Rick Story, I'd be terrified of him. I'd be terrified of Donald Cerrone no matter what, because that's a guy that when he's weighing in, he's happy. He's not Wanderlei Silva. He's not somebody you can break their mental toughness bullshit. This is a guy who just wants to fight. And if he's getting his ass kicked, he's thinking to himself, hell yeah, motherfucker, I'm fucking fighting right now. This is great. And, like, that's a scary, scary dude to deal with. So, I can actually see him going to Bellator if they give him the, you know, enough of a guarantee as opposed to what the UFC will give, because the UFC doesn't upset their apple cart.
Yeah, it's interesting because you immediately start thinking, oh, geez, who's Cerrone going to fight if he goes to Bellator? To me, I think he likes being in the UFC. He's been good to them. They've been good to him. He's made good money there. Granted, it's probably not $350,000 a fight, but I don't think UFC wants to lose him. And he's kind of, I want to say they're synonymous with one another, but seeing him in a Bellator cage, you know, getting an immediate shot against Koreshkov or something like that, I don't know. I don't see it. I think they'll come to a deal. Even if it's a little less, or, you know, they give him a pay-per-view main event with points or something, to sweeten the pot for him. But, I see him sticking around in the UFC, but, sometimes money talks. Who knows?
Yeah, you know, Ben Henderson left, and, that said, Cerrone's a bigger name. He just keeps becoming a bigger name. And if you're the UFC, there's probably a justification for paying him a little bit more than the other guys, just because, you know, you're going to get a guy that will fight 4 to 5 times a year. He'll fight at any weight on any notice, and he doesn't give a shit.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Did you see that? I was unaware of this until today, and maybe I was just not paying attention, but the maximum suspension possible for Jon Jones and Brock Lesnar is 1 year. Were you aware of this?
No, that doesn't sound right. It should be 2 years.
Okay, so that's, I hate to plug the competition, but a guy named Ariel Helwani wrote this article today. I know. Are you talking about me or him?
Oh, him for sure. I would never, ever. And I use that term, people, not to describe or denigrate homosexuals. Homosexuals are not fag. A fag is, I got a bit I'm working on. It doesn't matter. It doesn't work right now.
Okay. It's the intent of the word. It's not the actual word.
Exactly.
Everybody knows that. Come on.
Just like when somebody says nigger for fun, it's always the intent, right? No, that doesn't work at all. Nobody ever says, hey, you're a nigger to a white guy. Although I did hear a joke one time when they said you should drive by and yell out the wrong racial slur at people. Like, if you see Jewish people, you should yell, like, go back to Africa. They'd be like, the fuck are you, what? That doesn't make any sense. What are you, right. What's going on? Anyways, everybody, this is the racist part of the show.
So Helwani wrote this. I think this is from today or yesterday, but real recent, in the last 24 hours. According to the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency's policy, both fighters are facing a maximum 1 year suspension for their recent failed drug tests, not the usual 2 year ban. The reason for the shorter suspension is because the banned substances the pair tested positive for, hydroxychloroquine, and then Jones also failed for letrozole metabolite, are considered specified substances under the World Anti-Doping Agency code. The code says there's a greater likelihood that these specified substances could be susceptible to a credible non-doping explanation. It goes on, it's also important to note that if an athlete is found with a specified substance in his or her system, they could receive as little as a public warning. and if the athlete chooses not to accept the sanction from USADA, they have the right to go to arbitration. How has everyone missed this is my first question.
I'm going to lose it, but go ahead.
I mean, that's my first question. It's like, how did this just come out well over a month after these suspensions? Obviously, they didn't change the code, but it just goes further to show that no one reads stuff like that. It's like all those huge laws in Congress and Senate, nobody reads them. They just sign them and they move on. And they put stuff in there that people don't even notice or know, whether it's, you know, the thing you originally wrote about the prohibitive association. But I don't understand how no one caught this until today. And I think it's going to lead to more issues for the UFC and claims that they favor fighters. Imagine if Brock just gets like a warning, like a verbal warning, and isn't suspended at all. Can you imagine how bad that's going to look? Especially how he looked. Mark Hunt's going to be bullshit.
Like Dana White goes on YouTube, Brock Lesnar, you're a fucking cunt. Get your sources right, and that's it.
Yeah. I mean, what are your thoughts?
As someone that actually read the entire thing, I don't recall that coming up. Maybe it's been modified and maybe someone's stretching. I do like the fact that Ariel or any of these guys are trying to focus on that and not the prohibited association thing. Like we broke at halfguarded.com, which actually affected fights when Hector Lombard was not allowed to corner what's-her-face and Letourneau against Ioane and Jacek last November, you dick fucks. What's a dick fuck? That doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's horse shit. Either it's 2 years or it's nothing. Don't give me this, well, this might come up in something of a substance or blah, blah, blah. Either people knowingly broke the rules and they should be punished, or they did not knowingly break the rules and they should not be punished. If I eat a piece of meat and I do not know that somebody put a bunch of acid in it, I don't get charged for being high on acid or PCP or LSD or anything like that, because that'd be fucking stupid. Same principle. If you go to the score, I've gone to GNC, I've gone on Amazon.com, I bought creatine, usually I just buy protein powder. If my protein powder has a bunch of fucking drugs in it, I'm not responsible for that. How the fuck would I ever know that? Don't give me this, oh, well, this could be some blah, blah, blah. It's like, John, I got to give credit to Fuckface again, Brother Brian. John Jones is, I guess, on some level claiming that it may have been like basically a boner pill that he was taking.
Yeah, I think Bisbing on some podcast said that's what he failed for, like Sonnen saying he failed for the anti-estrogen. Like, Sonnen broke the story on Joe Rogan's show.
I remember that, although I kind of knew it before Sonnen said it, but think about this. John Jones is using the exact same excuse as Anderson Silva, and it might work.
Yeah.
It's just stupid. Either you have it's a legal concept, and I know most people don't care, but in layman's terms, to be criminally convicted of something, you have to commit the crime and knowingly mean to commit the crime. And the best example is, you sit down next to a guy, you both have an identical briefcase. When you get up, you take his briefcase, you walk away. That is not theft. It was an accident. You did not have what we call mens rea. You had the actus rea, which is the act of doing something, but you do not have the mens rea, the mental capacity to commit the crime. So you cannot accidentally commit crimes.
Right. What about something like speeding, though? You don't know the speed limit. You know what I mean? You're supposed to know.
Those are weird.
So are these. These are both very weird.
I think most of the time on speeding ones, they just say, well, you're driving on the road, you passed a speeding, opposed to speed limit, therefore you're on notice.
Right. That's kind of sort of similar to these examples, though. It's like, you should have known. I mean, that's essentially what we're saying, or they're saying, is that you should know what you're putting in your body. If it means getting these supplements tested, get them tested. If it means getting your Cialis and your boner pills tested, get them tested. I don't know.
It's all bullshit. We know it's bullshit.
Right.
Like, fucking, if you take real Viagra or real Cialis or whatever, like any kind of actual erectile dysfunction medicine, even though you're a 29-year-old fucking athlete in your fucking prime, like at 29 you can barely keep your dick in your pants, you're so fucking hard all the time. Fuck
he's
you.
Got a few kids too, and
yeah, he's a frugal motherfucker.
Have issues there.
But you know, whatever they want, he went out and he went through every single thing in the world that existed as far as substances are concerned, said, oh, yeah, that's what I'm taking, and that one may trigger this, and blah, blah, blah. And they're just everybody just wants to let him off the hook. It's all horse shit.
Yeah. I don't want to let him off the hook. I'm tired of his shit. But you know what just dawned on me? Maybe he really does need Cialis from the stuff he used to do in the past.
Maybe
he's fucked his system up, and maybe he truly, truly needs it, and he's using it. Do I buy that? No. Do I think that's what the story is? No. I just find it interesting that they could, both of them, could literally, according to the code that's been out there for over a year that nobody apparently read, they could just get a verbal warning. Like, it says they could receive as little as a public warning. This is on MMA Fighting right now by, you know, the most famous MMA journalist in the world. And it's like, how did no one notice this or come on? It just baffles me.
John Jones has made millions and millions of dollars. He has access to all the best doctors possible. If his dick is not working, he gets a valid prescription. He does not buy the bullshit over-the-counter Chinese shit at the gas station, and that's what he's basically claiming.
Yeah.
That is the only excuse he has is basically, I was, you know, fucking BP or Shell. I can't believe I said Amoco. Most people do not know what Amoco is. I was at the Shell station or the Citgo, and I saw the dick pill thing there at the counter. I just took that, and oh, it just happened to have a bunch of fucking estrogen in it. Me and Brock Lesnar both just accidentally took this shit, even though we are high-level athletes who look like fucking gods from Mount Olympus. Total fucking coincidence. Fuck off. You're all fucking cheating, and we know you're cheating.
Right. Yeah, I mean that's the bottom line to a degree, but the fact that Dana's hinting about Rumble versus John Jones, like, is that going to happen in November in New York? Like, it seems just so far fetched and unbelievable, but at the same time, it's like I could see it. I mean, it looks like it's headed in that direction. And he's saying there's good news for Jones. He's making a lot of hints that he's going to be back. So I'll be very interested to see how all this goes down.
Oh, for sure. And now we transition to the end of the show because we're at 1 hour. I just noticed I'm in the recording, and you have a wife and kid, and it's almost midnight for you right now, my friend. So yes. Let's wrap this shit up with another half hour of talking probably because okay. I'm a motor mouth, and I have to finish watching Mr. Robot. The Fight Club ripoff.
I have no idea. What is that, a movie or a TV show?
It's on USA Network. It's actually really good. I enjoy it a lot, but the first season in particular is like, it's a blatant ripoff of Fight Club. It's absurd. It's good stuff though. But again, I'm looking for stuff to fucking watch because, except for right now, I'm generally sober during the fucking evening. And there's nothing to fucking do, so I'm looking for TV shows to watch. Oh, also, everybody. On True TV, yeah, the old home of WWE something or another, Impractical Jokers is the funniest fucking show ever. Go on Google, go on YouTube, look Impractical Jokers. You will see some of the funniest fucking, like, hidden camera stuff. It's just four dudes who have been best friends since, like, high school. And they're the butt of all the jokes. Like, they have to go in front of people, and the friend would be like, all right, yeah, you're going to tell this lady your deep, dark secret, but you don't know what it is. So he's standing in front of the lady, he's like, so I got a secret. And they'd be like, and she'll be like, oh, yeah, what is it? And they'd be like, and this friend tells him, you burned down a church. And he'd be like, oh, shit, I have to say this. And he has to, like, tell the lady, I burned down my parish. She'd be like, really? What? He'd be like, no, it was a good thing. It was an old parish. And then his friend on the earpiece would be like, yeah, it was just too bad that everybody was inside of the building still. He'd be like, everybody's inside the building. It was an incense thing gone wrong. He'd be like, but I didn't mean it to happen, you know, blah, blah, blah. He'd be like, and then his friend's like, yeah, but you, but I lit the incense. He's like, yeah, so I'm the one that lit the incense. But, you know, after that, it was kind of like an act of God, right? You know, like, you believe me, this is a good thing. Like, this show is amazing. It's just four dudes from Long Island or Staten Island, one of the islands out there in New York. It's great, great comedy. Recommended to me by Doug Stanhope. Well, on his podcast, which I appeared on briefly once. So, yeah.
Okay. So, this weekend, another UFC, this is a fight night, Saturday night, August 27th. Headlined by Damian Maia versus Carlos Condit. Big welterweight fight. Each of those guys are kind of sort of in the mix for a title shot, depending on the outcome of this fight. Obviously, technically, Wonderboy is the number one contender. And there's, you know, GSP and Nick Diaz floating around out there. Who knows where they're going to go with Woodley next. But these two guys could make a claim after this fight. Condit's ranked fourth in the division, and Maia is ranked third. Fun fact on Damian Maia I saw today. In his last three fights, he has taken 12 significant strikes. Wow. That's like the most amazing stat of all time.
There's like, oh my gosh, I'm going to say it. There are women at, you know, abuse shelters who are envious of Damian Maia right now.
Wow. Yeah, that probably. I'm envious of Damian Maia right now.
You got children. They probably beat you up more than he has been beaten.
Yeah, my son does like to wrestle.
I saw those fucking videos. He's going old school, like Ultimate Warrior and stuff. That was awesome.
You know what it is? After he successfully uses the potty, I need to give him a prize. And my mom had me clean out all my old crap from the house. I'm like, I can't throw out these wrestling figures. So I've got like a trash bag full of them in the basement. So I'll go down and give him a new wrestling figure every time. So,
Oh, the joys of potty training. I've only heard about it, and I'm glad I don't have to do it.
I know they say boys are tougher. Whoever says that is right. It's tougher. My daughter was pretty easy. He's had several mishaps.
Yeah, it's because we're dudes, and like at heart, we kind of like instinctively know, like, no, I should just whip this shit out and just piss everywhere. Like, I'm a fucking man. Like,
he doesn't even. He just goes in his pants and gets it all over his socks and all over. It's a mess. I've had to wash his shoes. He can't aim. There's a lot going on.
Well, I can't aim either. So he
doesn't even. But you understand the concept at least. He doesn't even get the concept.
Well, if I get drunk enough, I just hop in the shower. I'm like, it's somewhere close to a drain. But,
speaking of urine and peeing, Meyer Condit, who are you picking?
I don't know which one is urine there. It's funny that Wonderboy is ranked higher, I understand why, but it's like he beat Johnny Hendricks, he beat Rory McDonald. Those are huge, huge wins. But in my mind, the winner of this fight is the real number one contender. I don't know who, you know, Wonderboy would have to fight. I hate to give a cop out. Like, I just want to see a good fight. But this is really, really fucking awesome.
Yeah, like, this is a great fight.
I would guess that Condit wins. I would favor him simply because he has more tools Maya has his incredible, incredible jiu-jitsu. And since moving to 170, he just said, fuck striking. I'm going to get in there, clinch with you, wrestle you down, take your back, and impose my ground game on you. And he's done it with a lot of success. But when he's at the absolute top, it's kind of failed him, except for John Fitch. Condit, at the same time, when Condit's faced the very best, he's kind of been outpointed. But those have been by well-rounded guys. I think Condit will have enough answers for Maya as far as, like, playing safe defense on the ground. Bless you. And being able to keep himself out of getting choked. And on the feet, Condit has so many tools at his advantage. That said, I'm pulling for Damian Maya just as I love the idea of a guy who fights like a pure old school fighter, which we don't see anymore. And Damian Maya is definitely just old school. He just gets in there and does jiu-jitsu and that's it. And I hope Maya wins, but I think Carlos Condit wins.
Yeah, I love Carlos Condit as a fighter. Obviously, I don't know the man personally. I may love him too, but there's something about Maya getting his title shot.
Remember, Condit's dad is a big shot.
Yeah, in New Mexico government or something.
He was
right?
He was like the
Secretary of State or something.
He was like the chief of staff to the
Bill Richardson.
Yeah, to the Democrat governor of New Mexico. I don't know if that was before or after Gary Johnson, the anti-GMO dickhead that he is. Everybody, Carlos Condit is like a couple of steps away from being Hillary Clinton's like bodyguards. That's pretty cool.
That would be something. But Maya's just been around a long time. He's 38. He's on a win streak. He's beaten really good guys. I'd like to see him get a shot just because he's been around forever. And he's so good on the ground. If he can get it to the ground, he's got a shot. I mean, obviously Condit is great on the ground as well, but Maya's at a different level, I think. So it's a fun fight, and one of them will definitely be in the mix for a title shot.
Who did you officially pick?
I didn't officially pick. I hate officially picking.
Well, that's a gimmick. You pick some. We fucked up. You pick someone, and I have to argue against it.
Yeah, who'd you pick?
I picked Condit.
You picked Condit, right? Then I'll pick Maya by submission. He'll get a takedown and take the back and get a rear naked choke in the second round. Nice. Let's see. Where else are we? So there's a couple other interesting fights on that show. Yeah, Pettis Oliveira. Pettis is going to cut down to 145. I had the TV on and whatever the UFC nightly
UFC
show is
Unleashed.
Called. No, UFC Tonight or whatever the talk show with DC and Florian. Oh my God. Pettis did not look good. Like, it was only of his head and it was some Skype connection, but he already looks drawn and thin and not looking good, especially considering this is still several days out from the fight. Like, he looked noticeably like gaunt in his face, where I was like, I noticed it. And especially this far out, it's weird. He did not look well, is how I would describe it. And he's fighting Charles Oliveira, who's a good fighter in his own right. He's 21-5, ranked 6th in the featherweight division. This is Pettis' first fight in the featherweight division. Obviously, the question is, how's the weight cut going to affect him? He's never fought at that weight in his career. He's always fought at 155. And Oliveira's a good fighter. He doesn't usually beat the tip-top guys. But he's good. He's a top 10 featherweight. So it's a good test for Pettis at that weight. To me, the question is, where's Pettis' head at coming off two straight losses? And cutting weight, is the confidence there? Does he really want it? Has he made enough money and got enough going on outside the cage where his heart's just not in it like it used to? I mean, some people are saying it's USADA issues for him. Again, I don't necessarily buy that because you could say that about every guy in the UFC right now. So you would think on paper Pettis should win this fight. He was the best 155-pound fighter in the world, arguably. He was the champ at one point coming off that win over Ben Henderson. So, I mean, this is a huge fight for Pettis. To me, it could be a turning point one way or the other. The question is, can he step up? Is he going to be comfortable at 145? I have my doubts just based on his most recent fights. What are you thinking?
Before I make a pick, you have to make a pick first. I will say that the weight cut thing is kind of weird. And again, I reference myself because I'm a narcissist. Or self-centered. I'm not really a narcissist. I kind of hate myself.
A self-loathing narcissist.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. I've cut, obviously, again, I referenced it earlier, I've cut weight, and there have been, it's basically about 2 weeks to 10 days out before a tournament, if I really want to cut weight, I've heard my ex-wife, bitch that she is, and my mom, and they will basically say, you look weird. Like, I look kind of drawn because they're used to me being about 180, 185 pounds. I'm really about 170, 175. I look a little thinner. My cheekbones protrude a little bit more. I'm also white, unlike Mexicans. And Pettis is Mexican, I think, something like that. So he might look a little skinnier than you're used to. That may just mean that he's cutting the weight way in advance. That means he doesn't have to cut a lot of water in it the day of.
Did you think he was a small lightweight, though? I never felt like he looked small. I felt like he was kind of, I don't want to say lanky, but I thought 155 was the right weight for him. I know in the past, there was a time he was scheduled for a fight with Aldo at 145, which got canceled because one of them got hurt. So, I mean, he's thought about it over the years. Yeah. I'm aware of that. But I never felt like to me, it's more the wrestling issue where if he's fighting a strong wrestler, he has trouble. He can't really stop the takedowns. And to me, that's more, to me, the bigger concern for him. It's not like he's getting outstruck or he's getting knocked out because dudes are stronger. It was more a wrestling issue. Was how I always viewed it.
Yeah, I never saw him as a big lightweight. I would say he was always small to medium, the kind of guy that if he really wanted to, he could kind of turn it on and maybe get to 145. He's 0-3 in his last three fights, and yet none of those fights, except for maybe Dos Anjos, would you look at those fights and go, oh yeah, he totally lost. Like, it's still the guy that knocked out Cerrone with a body shot in like 3 minutes. Like, he's really, really skilled. Right. That all said, we talk about him making weight. Charles Oliveira's missed weight at 145 like three or four times. Like,
true.
He doesn't make weight very often either. And I think they're actually pretty much about the exact same size. It's the kind of fight where I wish they would just say, fuck it. Nobody cuts weight. Everybody just fights whatever they weigh in that day. You guys are the exact same body type, the exact same size. And just go at it and have an amazing, amazing fight. I'm blah, 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 blah. I'm friends with Pettis, the lead jiu-jitsu coach at Rufus Sport. Everybody should know that. They always do. I kind of have to bring it up to humble brag and let people know that I'm somewhat biased. That's a CM Punk thing to just ask it.
It's the narcissist in you.
It's just the part of me that hates journalists don't reveal everything. It's like, fuck you. Just tell the truth, you dickheads. Like,
no, I'm with you. I get it. Luckily, I have no friends, so it's not an issue.
Well, I don't really have any friends either, but the friends I do have beat each other up for fun. So, whatever. I think the weight will be okay. I think Pettis can make it, and therefore, the impetus now shifts to you to keep this thing quickly going on. We're almost at 1 hour and 20 minutes or whatever. Who do you pick?
I'm going to pick Anthony Pettis. I don't know why. He needs to win more. He's desperate. you can't really lose four in a row. If he's going to turn it around, he's got to do it now. Oliveira's a bit streaky. You never know what you're really going to get with him. Like you said, he's missed weight three times now. And he's had some weird losses. The Max Holloway loss was kind of weird, kind of fluky. I'm going to go with Pettis. He's going to make a comeback, make a home at 145 and, make another run. He's young enough. He can do it. He'll win by decision though. That's what I got.
Watch the ums. That said, Charles Oliveira wins because, one, the fight will be take place at 147 pounds because he'll miss weight. And on the feet, Pettis is much more dynamic, I think, as far as they both are very crafty and can throw a lot of strikes. I think Pettis can hurt more with his strikes. I think he has a little bit better boxing. Though I think Oliveira has more natural power. It is on the ground where the difference exists the most. Pettis has a good guard, but Oliveira has a really wicked guard, and we've seen it in MMA, and I think that's the difference. I think they fight at one point they're on the ground, and that's where Oliveira pounces. I think he wins with an arm-end guillotine and taps out Anthony Pettis.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. You know, that's a fucking prediction, people.
Is that your real prediction, or are you just saying that to be
to
our gimmick?
The world will never know.
I know. And you know what's great about this? One of us looks like a genius every time.
Exactly. Halfguarded.com. There's always a genius on the line.
Also on the main card, we're going to move quick here. Your favorite fighter of all time, Paige VanZant, versus Beck Rollins. VanZant's first fight back since, I want to say the Nama Yunus fight, right?
Yep.
Where she lost, got dominated. I would use the term wrecked in that fight. But
I use that term.
Do you? I didn't know if that was a New England thing.
I don't know.
All right.
R-E-K-T. I think, I don't know if I posted it or not, but she got wrecked, I said. Yeah.
I have no recollection of that. And she's fighting Beck Rollins, who's coming off two wins in a row against two fighters you've never heard of. We're going to go with VanZant in this one. Just the fact that she's coming back this quick is kind of interesting. I think she had a movie offer on the table she could have taken. She decided she wanted to fight. So you got to give her a little, a little begrudging respect just for that alone. I mean, when she was fighting regularly, she was good. She wasn't a world beater by any stretch, but she was on a three-fight win streak in the UFC, again, against fighters that aren't tippity-top level, but neither is Beck Rollins, who's 7-4 overall in her career. So we're going to go VanZant by decision again. She'll outpoint her striking, maybe get a couple takedowns like she usually does. Then that's how I see it going, I think.
All right. I cannot find the post where I use the word wrecked, but, yes, Paige is one of my favorite fighters to torment because, I call her the UFC's Lolita. And I think a lot of the interest in her is because she looks like she's 15 and it disturbs me. And plus her, delusions that she's had a really tough life. Like I fucking...
Did she say that? Is that like an actual quote?
Yeah. One of the things, I fucking like have that on the site, halfguarded.com. Like, we have like the clip where she talks about like a tough blah, 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 tough road to the UFC, but all this stuff. I'm like, you're fucking 20 and you're in the UFC. Are you out of your fucking mind? And like, she was, I saw the, we got a write up, right now, I think it's the main article on halfguarded.com where, I'm plugging shit to like the five people listening to this. She talked about her time on Dancing with the Stars. She's like, I really needed to do that. It, like, validated my entire dancing career, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, are you out of your fucking mind, you little brat? Like, you danced for a long time and you needed to do Dancing with the Stars to validate you? Fuck you. I fucking played Little League Baseball as long as you fucking danced. I didn't have to get a shot in the big leagues against, you know, fucking Johnny Cueto to fucking feel validated for all my youth, you fucking ingenue.
It's even weirder, though, because Dancing with the Stars, what does that validate? You're dancing against football players and people who've never danced before. If you win Dancing with the Stars, it doesn't mean you're a good dancer. It means you were the most popular person on that show.
It's a fucking joke, and she's delusional. I accept that Dancing with the Stars is not my world. I have no clue about any of it. And I don't say that like, oh, I'm too cool for school, blah, blah, blah. It's like, it is not designed for me.
It's not on your radar. Yeah, there's so many things like that. Yeah.
Like, Chris Jericho appears. I don't give a shit. Whatever. Like, my mom watches, like, fucking surgery shows. Like, I'm 500 pounds overweight. I'm going to get surgery. I'm like, Mom, why are you watching this? She's like, oh, it's fun. I want to see the fat people. I'm like, oh, come on. Leave it alone. Like,
is that a quote? Your mom says that?
Well, she likes to watch my big fat life and all this stuff. Like, she watches all kinds of weird shows. I'm like, why are you watching this? She's like, I don't know. She likes surgery shows and shit like that.
Yeah. And it's an escape.
Maybe. But whatever. You know, escape with the house. There's lots of house reruns. But Paige did her thing. And I do give her a lot of credit for coming back and fighting.
Yeah. It's surprising to me. I thought. Because you would think with – it's hard to say if it's fame – because it's a fleeting thing. Even people who watch Dancing with the Stars, do you think many of them are like looking forward to this fight or even though she's fighting? Probably not. It's a real short-term thing where, you know, the finals, that night on Twitter, it's the number one trend and people are pulling for her or the other guy who actually won the show. But no one cares now that you move on and you have another reality show. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if it translates at all. Because there's not, I'm not hearing much buzz for this fight at all, considering she was on one of the top rated shows in the country, you know, less than 6 months ago.
Yeah, I think it, she probably benefits more than a lot of people do because she's part of a built-in organizational fan base. Whereas if you're like, I don't know if you ever did, like Screech from Saved by the Bell. If Screech does, who, by the way, was at my 28th birthday party when I was at a bar and he showed up and I'm like, oh yeah, I got a picture of me and Screech before he like did like all the rapes or whatever he did. But if you're Screech and you Dancing with the Stars, when it's done, you have nothing else. You don't have another promotional vehicle behind you. And I think a lot of people on Dancing with the Stars have that issue. Paige has a promotional vehicle, and the UFC is using it well with Big Fox. She's on, you know, national TV. So there's probably some carryover there. As far as winning fights, I mean, you know, she got destroyed by Rose. She didn't look competitive. She looked good prior to that. She beat Felice Herring and stuff like that.
And she looked good in those fights. They weren't like close fight. I want to say she dominated them, but they were sound wins. It wasn't like there was ever any doubt who the better fighter was in her three previous fights. So people rag on her like she's just all looks and it's a gimmick. But she's got some skill. I'm not saying she's going to be a title contender or the top fighter in the world. I don't see that. But she's still young and she's good. I don't think people – I think you and I talk about it sometimes that there's some nuance to things. She's not a total gimmick, just like Conor McGregor's not a total gimmick. There's some skill there. Obviously, that's not the best comparison, comparing McGregor to Paige VanZant. He'd probably kill me if he heard that come out of my mouth. But there's a similar line of thought where it's like, Conor McGregor's getting this push. He's getting easy fights because he talks well and he promotes fights well. It's not about him winning fights. He won 7 fights in a row in the UFC. It's like, that's pretty damn good, no matter who you are. No one really does that. And the fact that he can talk and is, you know, brags about it, people get turned off and say it's all hype. And to a lesser extent, obviously, Van Zandt's not the fighter McGregor is and doesn't have the promo ability, but there's a similarity where she gets no respect on the win she actually does have and has looked good in.
Yeah, and again, I have to play a contrarian here and, you know, advocate for Beck Rawlings. That said, Rose Namajunas is a really, really top-level, super great fighter. She's going to challenge for the title probably next. And so Paige losing hers, not a big deal when you're, you know, 22 years old or whatever. I think that Beck Rawlings is the exact level that Paige should be fighting at. I go back to what she did with Felice Herring, and, you know, Felice did well at first, and to her credit, Van Zandt rallied, and she really showed a lot of, like, you know, fighter's spirit or whatever the Japanese say, when pride and all that shit. But she was really, you know, she really dug deep, and I have a lot of respect for that. As much as I joke and make fun of her for her thinking she had a tough life because she only made the UFC at 21. Ooh, yeah, wait till you're in your 30s, bitch. I shouldn't say bitch. That's a fucking misogynist term. Eh, you know what I mean.
It's intent.
Yeah, I intended it to be misogynist. Because I have a problem with women. But she's coming back. She's fighting. She has a lot to lose and a lot to gain. I think it's an interesting fight because if there's one female fighter at 115 pounds that you almost don't want to expose to the masses, it's Beck Rawlings. I love Beck. I think she's funny. I think she's kind of hot. She has all these cool tattoos. But she also has a lot of, like, photos of herself online, completely naked, with just, like, like, she's barely covered, and it says, like, fuck feminism, I like all people. Like, she's a very, like, anti-mainstream feminist type of person. Like, in America, we call her a conservative. I don't know if that really works for Australians, but she's somebody, like, I think that the UFC is lucky that people don't look too much into 3 or 4 from the top on a fucking Fox Sports, big Fox, card. Because if they did, they'd be like, she's, possibly has a lesbian relationship with Angela Magana. She poses naked all the time. She hates feminists. She's kind of like Sarah Palin, except for with tattoos, and she, she sees New Zealand from her house and not Russia.
Wow.
And that's why she wins. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That's solid. Last fight on the main card. We're going to move quick. We've got a rematch of one of my favorite fights ever. I don't know about you. Joe Lauzon versus Jim Miller. Both guys a little bit past their peak, you know. I don't think either of them are ranked at this point. I'm going to double check that. But Lauzon's coming off a big win. I think it was on Diego. That 200 card. They were both on the UFC 200 card, right?
Lauzon beat Diego and Miller beat Gomi, maybe?
Gomi. Yeah. Both spectacular wins, both dominant wins. They both got right back on the horse because that was only, you know, 6-7 weeks ago, right? Maybe 7 weeks. So they're back in there. I am going to pick Joe Lauzon because he is from Bridgewater, Massachusetts, 45 minutes from where I live, probably the best fighter to ever come out of this neck of the woods, as they say. Miller won the first fight, I believe, by decision, right?
You know, it's funny, when you said it was a rematch, I completely forgot, and I remembered. Yeah, they were like this all amazing bloody war on the undercard of Dos Anjos Dos Santos and Velasquez too.
Yeah, Lauzon had a nasty cut, I remember.
Yeah.
They were bleeding everywhere. That was an awesome fight. So I'm going Lauzon to get the win back. I'm trying to I don't even remember who won.
I think – I want to say Miller won.
Oh, yeah, me too. Yeah.
But, I mean, it's funny. You actually described it perfectly, which is these are two guys when I'm like, oh, my gosh, Joe Lauzon, Jim Miller, they're fighting. That should be really good. And then I realized, like, they're both not relevant. They're not top 10 talents anymore. Like, they're good fighters, but they're not great. They'll give a good show. They're going to have a good show on Saturday, I'm sure. But realistically, there's guys up and coming, whether it's, you know, Berriush or, you know, Edson Barboza or whomever, whatever, you know, anybody want to find. There are other guys at lightweight that are just better. And these are two guys who are veterans. They've earned their spot in the UFC. I'm happy they get a shot on Fox Sport or Fox, Big Fox. They'll have a good fight. They're very well matched. I have to, in theory, officially pick Jim Miller. I'll pick him because he can stuff Lauzon's jits and grind away a win. But, I mean, they're just – it's sad because they're in their 30s and they're over the hill and done.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the thing with Lauzon was that Dunham loss. I don't know if you remember that fight.
I do, yeah.
He looked awful. Like, I thought, like, he was shot. And then MMA is funny like that. A couple punches and somebody looks like, oh, my God, they're back. I mean, how many times has Vitor done that? But you just don't know what you're going to get with either one of them because – I mean, Miller's looked sluggish in some fights, too.
Oh, with Cerrone. Yeah, like when Miller fought Cerrone. That said, when I looked at both of them, Lauzon, Wendy Les looked great. Beating Diego Sanchez doesn't mean shit. Miller beating Takanori Gomi, that doesn't mean shit. Like, they're all kind of fighting, like, the same level of, like, past their prime guys. And it'll be a fun fight, but, like, I know the grown men can make their own decisions. That's the name of the beast. But I feel almost bad because they're fighting, and I don't know if they know that they're never going to make it big again. Like, these are not guys who are going to fight for a title. They're not challenging Eddie Alvarez. They're not going to fight Conor McGregor. They're lucky if they can, you know, get past the number 8 or number 9 guy in the division. That's just the reality, and it's kind of sad, but...
And, I mean, they've both been in freaking wars. You know, it's crazy, but, I mean, Lauzon debuted in the UFC in 2006. It was 10 years ago when he beat Jens Boulder. Like,
Holy shit.
It was in September of 06. And he was fighting before that. He had a few wins in Massachusetts locally where
he had some really good fights. Like I actually remember before he was in the UFC, he fought and lost to Jorge Masvidal, and that was when I first was like, Masvidal's really fucking good. Can't believe that's over a decade ago.
Yeah, and same thing with Miller. He's been around forever too. I mean, he had that seven or eight fight win streak, and then he got shut down by Ben Henderson on that first Fox show. It didn't air on TV, but it was right before the Velasquez-Dos Santos fight. Both of them just had – it's not just that they're, like, you know, in their early 30s, mid-30s
point. Wait. The first Dos Santos and Velasquez was Henderson Clay Guida.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I must be thinking of a different
There's a fight. Nerd stat for everybody. Yeah.
No, that's good. I remembered it different. I didn't actually look it up. That was off the top of my head, so I'm sure you're right. But either way, it's not just like they're in their early 30s. They've been fighting a lot of the best fighters in the world for the last decade and been in wars, like fight of the year, bloody, nasty fights where I got to be honest, I'm not surprised they're where they are in their careers now because they've just got a lot of miles on them at this point. Hopefully they can recreate some of that magic from the first fight. But we shall see, won't we?
Yeah. I'm actually looking up, Jim Miller, what fight you might have been talking about.
He was on a tear where he was almost the number one contender. He lost to Ben Henderson.
Yeah, he lost to Ben Henderson on the undercard of Dan Hardy versus Chris Lytle.
weird.
And that said, I had my phone remind me of a joke I had for the UFC and Fox 21 show, which is really good. The top four fights are great. You can even argue Sam Alvey, his fight's pretty good. The rest of it sucks. And therefore, UFC and Fox 21 is like Kate Upton. It's top heavy. Yeah. And that's how we end this show, everybody.
Yeah, I would just delete that.
No, I'm not going to delete shit, everybody. You've been listening to the show carried by Matt Grady here at HalfGuarded.com. He has children. He has to go to sleep. I have dogs. I don't have to go to sleep. I'm going to watch baseball. So, Matt, any final things to go over or say or whatever?
Bellator Friday night, Benson Henderson or Pitbull?
Oh, I fucking saw that on my DVR. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, that show's happening and nobody's talking about it. Ben Henderson probably,
except me.
Yeah, Henderson probably wins by decision.
Yeah, I mean, I think that fight's at 155 and Pitbull usually fights at 145. Henderson should be.
No. One Pitbull fights at 45, one fights at 55.
Right, but I think this is the 45-pound Pitbull.
Oh, well, that's even more pathetic.
Well, yeah, you would think Henderson would be able to win that fight fairly easy and regularly. Also, a fun fact, on the undercard of that show, Machida's brother fights.
Really?
Do you know that? Yeah. He's actually older. He's older, but he's smaller.
Oh, I know his fucking, what's his?
Shinzo or something?
Shinzo Machida, yeah, that's right. He was actually, I think, actually better at point style karate than Lyoto Machida. But,
This fight's at 145, 145 pounds. His career record in MMA is 3-2, and he is 39 years old. Kind of a weird time to be getting your break in Bellator, but that's Bellator for you, isn't it?
That, and I got a message on Twitter from someone saying, me and somebody do a college football podcast. You want to be on it? What the fuck? I mean, I'll do it.
That sounds like something you would do. No, that seems right up your alley.
When I was an undergrad at the University of Iowa, I did the local radio for 2 years. And I wasn't in charge of things for a while, the last year I was. But the first year, I talked about a lot of college football, and the guy was always, like, going over, like, defensive ends and this and that. My dad would listen, and he goes, what the fuck is that guy talking about? I'm like, I don't know, Dad. Like, he's really, like, into the weird minutiae. He goes, who gives a shit about the fucking Hawkeyes defensive back or whatever? Like, that's horse shit. No one cares who you guys have at safety. Talk about Notre Dame. I'm like, yeah, whatever, Dad. So, yeah, that's all I got. say, if you have anything final to say, say it. Otherwise, when I hang up, it's done.
Yeah, I think that covers it. We covered the past week, the coming up week, and the news in between. So I'd say we're good. Anything we need to look out for on the site this week? Anything coming up?
Not over the next couple of days. That big breaking news story piece I've been promising will be coming out next week. I didn't want to get swallowed up by regular UFC coverage. I'm going to do my best on Sunday night to have my recording devices with me to maybe have Doug Stanhope, some of the other comedians, do like a brief appearance for a crazy half-guarded hour, whatever the fuck I call this shit, here at halfguarded.com.
What do you have to bring to do that? Are you going to get like accused of having a bomb on the plane or something?
I actually do have a device that will connect with the 355.
You can't say device.
Yeah, it's a little gizmo that connects with my 355 microphone port into my iPhone. Will utilize a good microphone. Okay. I'll bring it with me. Otherwise, I'll just like hand the phone to people and say, "Hey, talk into the recorder and see if anybody does it." And then I can be like, "Hey, I had so and so on my podcast." Even if it's like 30 seconds of "fuck you, loser." But we actually have some really good stuff coming up. I know that the Peach Machine has part three of his three-part series on mental health coming out next week. He actually has some other good stuff in the next day or two, either today when you all listen to this on Thursday or Friday. James Swift has a really good article on what's wrong with the 90s. I have
it's think- too late to fix it now.
Eh, whatever. I know you, Mr. Grady, have some stuff that I have in the hopper, that fucking, crossword puzzle. One day I'll just, I still have it in my mind. Don't worry, I haven't forgot it. I'll publish it one day when I'm bored or whatever. You know, we're going to have some really, potentially really big interviews coming up, leading up to USC 203 with some of the biggest stars on the entire show. So, all you three people listening, tell the other three people, and then we'll have like nine, if that, my math works, or maybe six. I'm not really sure. That's halfguarded.com. This is the show. And Matt, once again, did not corral me. And we're at an hour and 45 fucking minutes, and you should go to sleep. So I'm going to hit the close button and hang up, and Matt will go to bed. So everybody, thanks for listening. This has been the show, carried by Matt Grady. I'm the dipshit, Mike Coughlin. And now we throw to you, Mike Goldberg, as you carry us out. Matt, bye. Bye, everybody.
Good night.
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times come to send you on your way. We've seen it all, bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about.
We hope you will.